We've been reading the Dhamma Dharlila chapter, and we're going to continue. Canto 10, chapter 9, and we're up to verse 21. 1 through 19 is a summary of the Lila, and then these two verses, 20-21, they're summarizing. Shukadev Goswami is summarizing the message behind the Leela. The message behind the Leela has something to do with the exalted nature of the love of Mother Jasoda. And the commentary makes it clear it's not just Mother Jasoda, it's all of the residents of Vrindavan. So Yasoda and Nanda and the cowherd boys, and the elder gopis and gopas, and the young, all the brijbasis, they're very unique. And they have a very special love that is gifted to them by Krishna, or their love for Krishna, he rewards with a particular type of prema that doesn't even regard his opulences, it just regards their relationship with him and nothing else matters. And then this verse, 21, says, you know how to get that special mercy. Mother Jasoda, the previous verse, Mother Jasoda has more mercy than Brahma, Shiva, even the goddess of fortune. Because they're not able to tie up Krishna with rope meant for tying up cows. They can't do that. She can do that. So then how do you get there? How do you achieve such mercy? How can you become a resident of Vrindavan and a follower of the residents of Vrindavan? That's 21. Very important verse for Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Very important verse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service. But he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body the same as the self. So we read Prabhupada's purport and some commentary, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath. Now we're reading Sanatana Goswami's commentary on this verse. Qualification to obtain that mercy, the mercy that Yashoda had, is described. The son of the cowherd woman, that's Krishna, is the son of Yashoda, though accepting bondage, tied up by rope, endowed with all great qualities, is easily available to those with devotion to Krishna, iha, or in braja, iha, which is perceived in the heart, even if not living there. So he's going to elaborate, even if you're not a resident of Vrindavan, if you carry that love in your heart, you can achieve the love of the residents of Vrindavan. Then he gives several alternative, possible, valid translations of that. Or, the Lord is attainable by persons who respect worship of the Lord, but is not attainable by those who realize they are separate from the body, dehi nam, who realize atma, or the jivan muktas, Gyani Nam, or those who have achieved perfected liberation, Atma Bhutanam. So even those who have the spiritual conception beyond the bodily conception, even those cannot attain Krishna. Brahman realization isn't sufficient for being an associate of Krishna. Then he uses the same word that Vishwanath used, but he is attainable only with suffering, and only partially. Now the suffering It's not really clear. It's not really clear what is intended, but it seems what's intended is there's the not suffering of the Gyanis. They achieve liberation, which means going beyond worldly suffering by a spiritual sukh, Brahma sukh. We'll hear that shortly in his same commentary. But not suffering in the worldly sense of, oh, I stubbed my toe, or oh, or he or she said something mean. Not that kind of suffering. But the suffering of living, the cowherd village people just live in the world and they undergo what the tribulations of living in the world, but they transcend those tribulations by their Krishna bhakti. It seems that that's what's being, is in comparison to the impersonalists. They're living in the world, they're enduring whatever is within the world, and they're transcending by a different method than just negation. Now, we heard something in the morning class that had something to do with making sacrifice for others. And when you sacrifice for others, you're foregoing your own comfort in favor of the well-being and happiness of another. So that kind of suffering, the happiness of the mode of goodness, I guess. Where you're undergoing some tribulation, but that's okay because it's just for the benefit, the greater good of others. Anyway, it's not really clear exactly what is intended by Sanatana Goswami when he says he is attainable only with suffering.
There was
an earlier discussion where material effort is not recommended, but spiritual effort is recommended. The Damodar Leela is speaking about the effort of Mother Jasoda, that's the Parishrama, she's making an effort to bind him. And it's not happening, and it's not happening. She's persevering. She's perspiring. Flowers are falling from her hair. She's suffering. Parishrama, maybe that's it. But, you know, the striving to please Krishna part, as opposed to an impersonalist that just by philosophically identifying themselves with the soul. Anyway, let's see. So here's another reading. Or, even though such mercy is not available to devotees like Brahma, it is available to these devotees, the Brijbasis, that mercy. Or, he gives happiness, sukkapa, to these devotees and not to others. The greatness of bhakti is stated. The Supreme Lord, whose mercy is rare, Ayam, dear to the people of Gokula, Gopika Sutta, is easily attained by the devotees in any place, but he is rarely attained by the three other types of persons. That's text 21, the three other types. Tapasvi, Gyanis, and those who identify with the body. Or he is easily attainable, or he makes one attain happiness in this world or in the present body. Summary, the Lord is not easily attained by liberated persons, that is, those who have merely destroyed suffering by liberation, which isn't the same commentary. So, what's the verse saying? The verse is saying how to... The previous verse is, Yasoda has mercy unlike Brahma Vishnu, excuse me, Brahma, Shiva, or Goddess of Fortune. Because she can bind Krishna. And they don't have that capacity. They haven't received that kind of mercy from him. And how does one attain it? It's the spontaneous love of the residents of Vrindavan, not by austerities, not by yoga, certainly not by those in the bodily conception of life. So now we're going to on to reference to this verse. It helps us understand this verse by references from other sections of the Bhagavatam. The first reference is from the very same chapter 9, the Damodar Leela chapter, where Krishna's seeing his mother pursuing him with a stick in her hand. So when Lord Krishna saw his mother, stick in hand, he very quickly got down from the top of the grinding mortar and began to flee as if very much afraid. So was he afraid or was he not afraid? Well, he was as if afraid. And we'll hear some explanation. It's nice. Although yogis try to capture him as Paramatma by meditation, desiring to enter into the effulgence of the Lord with great austerities and penances, they fail to reach him. But Mother Yashoda, thinking that same personality God had Krishna to be her son, began following Krishna to catch him. That was verse 9 from this chapter, Damodar Leela chapter. Commentary. This is Jiva Goswami. No, it's Vishwanath Chakravarti, sorry. Yashoda held a stick in her hand to instill fear in Krishna. Here's the explanation. He is described as very much afraid, bitavat, having the quality of fear, because he understood the great affection of his mother. Although internally, Krishna had no fear. So what's that distinction? It's not a worldly fear. So what kind of a fear is it? Well, it's not a worldly fear. He had no fear. He had no worldly fear. But there's an affection between his mother and him where she's wanting to chastise him. And he's feeling that emotion. So going back to the very beginning of this chapter, I've been saying this, you know, for a week. The beginning of the chapter, the commentary says, Krishna wanted that experience. He wanted Mother Yashoda to scold him. And we've been saying over and over, most children don't want mother or father to scold them. Most children don't like that. But Krishna knew that was coming from the affection of Mother Yashoda. It's a type of parental affection. It's not hurtful. It's loving affection. And he knew that, and he wanted to feel that. And so in the previous chapter, he was stealing butter. She didn't scold him. She just hugged him. So then he ate dirt. She didn't scold him. She just said, let me see what's in your mouth. So now he's doing something to get the scolding. He's getting the scolding. She's got a stick in his hand, her hand. So he's feeling fear, as if afraid. But it's not, as if means it's not the worldly fear. He has no fear. He has no fear. But it's the reciprocation of the love. And therefore he's exhibiting and feeling a transcendental emotion in reciprocation with her transcendental emotion. Or it can mean that Krishna stood up and ran and fled in a fearful manner. Queen Kunti, we know that she makes a comment about this in her prayers. Canto 1, Chapter 8, Kunti prays, O Krishna, Yashoda took up a rope to bind you when you committed an offense, and your perturbed eyes overflooded with tears, which washed the mascara from your eyes. You were afraid, although fear personified is afraid of you. This sight is bewildering to me. It's in our Dhammadharastakam prayers. We sing this one. Kunti. So he was afraid, but not afraid. Like we know what fear is. Yashoda. She doesn't mention her by name. Mentions her by her position, and it's clear who that person is. Yashoda chased her son, who can never be attained. Na yam apa. Even by great mystics and yogis, yoginam, who perform austerities, penances, and meditation to enter pravishtam, to enter Brahman. This point is made clear in verse 21. So when Mother Jasoda is running after Krishna, it makes reference to this verse, this evening verse, text 21, that says, Nayam Sukhapo Bhagavan. Bhagavan Sri Krishna is not easily attainable. The yogis can't, the tapasvis can't, those in the bodily conception of life certainly can't, but Mother Jasoda can. He's not easily attainable. So now we're going to what happened after the birth of Krishna. Canto 10, chapter 5. The first two verses from Canto 10, chapter 5. Krishna is born. When Krishna appeared as his son, Shukadeva Goswami is describing, Nanda Maharaj, fully devoted, was overwhelmed by jubilation. After bathing and purifying himself and dressing properly, he invited brahmanas who knew how to recite Vedic mantras. After having these qualified brahmanas recite auspicious Vedic hymns, he arranged to have the Vedic birth ceremony celebrated for his newborn child according to the rules and regulations, and he also arranged for worship of the devatas and forefathers. Those are the first two verses of chapter 5. Commentary. These two verses illustrate how Nanda's name really means, quote, he who gives joy to the universe. The word to or but indicates that the fortune of Nanda, with his pure parental affection, was superior to that of Vasudeva. Now we're going to get this whole comparison, Vasudeva and Nanda, Yashoda and Devaki, and the superiority of Nanda and Yashoda, their particular love. It's the topic is the unique love of the Vrijbasis compared to anybody else. So, besides Brahma, Shiva, and the goddess of fortune, even Vasudeva and Devaki, the love of the Vrijbasis is superlative, the best. This description continues until verse 19. So chapter 5, 1 and 2 goes till 19. Parikshit also praises him in two verses. Him is Nanda. So that praise of Nanda is found in chapter 8. Canto 10, chapter 8. Oh, learned Brahmana. That's Maharaj Parikshit speaking to Shukadeva. He's praising Nanda. Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Lord. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love. Although Krishna was so pleased with Vasudeva and Devaki that he descended as their son, they could not enjoy Krishna's magnanimous childhood pastimes, which are so great that simply chanting about them vanquishes the contamination of the material world. Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, however, enjoyed these pastimes fully. And therefore, their position is always better than that of Vasudeva and Devaki. Like, it's very, very clear. So what makes it better? We're going to hear. Now back to chapter 5, Krishna's been born. The word atma-ja with utpane can only mean born as a son. Now reference to chapter 2. Thus the Supreme Lord, who is the Supersoul of all living entities and who vanquishes all fear of his devotees, entered into the mind of Vasudeva in full opulence. Same chapter says, thereafter, accompanied by plenary expansions, the fully opulent Supreme Lord, who is all auspicious for the entire universe, was transferred from the mind of Vasudeva to the mind of Devaki. Devaki became beautiful by carrying Krishna, joy to all beings, appearing on his own, just as the east becomes beautiful by carrying the rising moon. In this manner, Krishna appeared in Nanda and Yashoda as well, you know, mind to mind. For the Lord to appear as the highest goal, that is, complete absorption in the Lord, is necessary. We're going to hear some more about this tomorrow morning. Tomorrow morning class is going to be very interesting. Complete absorption in the Lord is shanta. That's a preliminary. For the Lord to enter into vatsalya rasa, there has to be absorption in the Lord. And the absorption in the Lord in itself is, we're healed tomorrow morning, shanta. It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's in Krishna's words to Uddhava, absorption in the Lord. That's preliminary. And then comes intense prema, because that intense prema was invested in the residence of Braja. That same intense prema was not invested in Brahma or Shiva or the goddess Lakshmi. Now, they certainly had prema, but not the same. As the following quotations, plural, illustrate. Here's a quotation we've all heard many times. Yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Prabhupada quoted that many times. The meaning of scripture is revealed to the person who has devotion to guru as much as he has devotion to the Lord. That's Svetashvatara Upanishad. Yasya devi para bhaktir tata devi tata garau tasyaite katita hyarta prakashante mahatmanaha. Here's another reference similar from Vedanta Sutra, commentary by Madhva. Bhaktir evainam nayati bhaktir evainam darshati. It's very clear. Bhaktir evainam nayati. Bhakti brings one to the Lord and shows the Lord. So, emphasis is there with bhakti and specifically prema bhakti, the type of love of the residents of Vrindavan. Krishna says to Uddhava, chapter canto 11, Uddhava Gita, only by bhakti with full faith can devotees obtain me. Similarly, this is shown in Narada's previous life and the histories of Dhruva and Prahlad. Doesn't go into it. But they attained the personality of Godhead because of their very strong bhakti for the Lord. The three of them, Narada, Dhruva, Prahlad. According to the logic Tat Kratu Nyaya, what one thinks, one becomes. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Ye yata mam prapadyante tang sataiva pajamyaham. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Thus, he's making a point. A particular manifestation of the Lord will depend upon a particular type of worship. Nanda and Yashoda's particular type of bhakti will be described in Brahma's praises later, chapter 14. But so now, because of the particular type of love of Vasudeva and Devaki, Krishna appeared in form, Vishnu form. Because of the particular love of Nanda Yashoda, he appeared in Aturam form. When they requested that Krishna hide himself, it says, we'll hear, that same form that was shown to Nanda and Yashoda manifested eclipsing or concealing the forearm form. So that is, when the prison house of Kamsa, he appeared, he offered prayers, she offered prayers, Krishna spoke. It says specifically, before their very eyes, that forearm form was withdrawn and the two-armed baby form was manifest. Because they have a mix. So the form that the Lord shows corresponds with the bhakti of the devotee. So they have mix. Forearm form, two-arm child form. They have parents and divinity conception of Krishna at the same time. So he showed a corresponding form. Nanda Yashoda, no divinity. Our child. So he showed that form. And he's attracted by that kind of love that they have. That's the whole message. They receive mercy, but they receive mercy because they're qualified for that mercy. This verse 21 is saying, how does one become qualified like that? By association with those who are qualified like that. By spontaneous devotional service. Which is Rupa Goswami's teaching in bhakti, nectar devotion. How does one come to spontaneous? By regulative, but not just by vittis, by hearing, meditating upon, becoming followers of the residents of Vrindavan, the ragatmikas, the perfected souls. That's Rupa Goswami's nectar devotion. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what's in this commentary right here. That's what we're hearing. Nanda is described as Mahamana, one whose mind was in Krishna to an extreme degree. Or it can mean one whose mind is fully capable of meditating on Krishna, as it is said, Canto 5, Chapter 18, the devatas constantly dwell with all good qualities. This is, yes, yasti bhaktir bhagavatya kinchana sarvayur ganesh tatra sama svete sara harava bhakta shukato mahadguna manorate nasati davato bahi. You know the verse? You've heard the verse. You've heard it, because Prabhupada would speak it regularly. The verse is saying, keeping it simple, those who become devotees manifest naturally the qualities of the devatas. Those that abhakta, those that are not hari bhaktas, the harav abhaktasya, kuto mahadguna, they have no good qualities. Manoratena. Manorata. They're riding on the rata, the chariot of the mana, the chariot of the mind. So whatever good qualities you find in people that haven't taken shelter in devotion to the personality of Godhead, whatever good qualities, it's flickering. It's a manorata exhibition. There's no substance. But those that take shelter of the personality of Godhead, then you get substance. It's spiritual. That's where shelter of the personality of Godhead gives spiritual quality. That's the verse. Here's the translation. The devatas constantly dwell with all good qualities. In that person who has pure bhakti for the Lord, there are no good qualities in the non-devotee who chases after temporary material objects with a desire for material pleasure. So that's embellishing the statement that Nanda is Mahamana. His mind was absorbed in Krishna to extreme degree, so he had good qualities. According to the statement, Nanda's absorption in Krishna was his main quality, and all other qualities like generosity were included in it, because when Krishna was born, he was generous to the max. He gave in charity like anything. And the purpose of his giving charity was his jubilation, but we hear also it was because he wanted to please Vishnu, so benefit would go to his son. He wasn't thinking, my son is Vishnu. His charity was for the pleasure of Vishnu. Because some people give charity for other reasons than pleasing Vishnu. They get a sense of good feeling, or it's good to be charitable or something. They get some pious credits. They get some pious credits and they'll prosper in this and next life. People have different ideas of why being charitable is good. Nanda was maximum charitable, resting upon this one quality, complete absorption in Krishna. So because of absorption in Krishna as his son, please Vishnu by this charity, the benediction from Vishnu will go to his son, his son will be protected. At the end, how about the end? You remember it, right? The description, this description of the good qualities go to those who are absorbed in the Supreme Lord, that description also represents the nature of Yashoda. The nature of Yashoda. Oh, learned Brahman, a mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Lord. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj undergo to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? So now, both Nanda and Yashoda and Vasudeva and Devaki gave birth to Krishna. That's a bit of a mystery. Krishna appeared simultaneously as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, less spoken about as, and he simultaneously appeared as the son, not just Yogamaya, the daughter of Yashoda, but she had twins. This is Vishwanath's statement. Simultaneously, Krishna appeared as the son of both. One can judge the nature of the cause by the results. Palena, pala, kananam, anumiyate. You can judge a thing by its results. So Krishna appeared in four-armed form, Vasudeva Devaki. Krishna appeared in a little baby two-armed form, indicating the type of love they had. It's an indication of the type of love they had. Krishna appears according to their type of love. The words, quote, being born, quote, unquote, describe an external appearance. The Lord is never born like a material person. This aspect was the same in both couples, in the mind Vasudeva to Devaki, the mind of Nanda to mind of Yasoda. Same principle. But there is a difference in his appearing as their son. He appeared to Nanda and Yasoda in the form of their son, but he did not appear in this manner to Vasudeva and Devaki. This was suitable because of Nanda and Yasoda's love. It was pure parental affection and was very strong. That is indicated by the word tu in the present verse. Later, also, it will be shown. However, Vasudeva and Devaki were covered by knowledge of the Supreme Lord's greatness. This is revealed in their previous statement, chapter 3. This is Krishna's appeared forearm form. They're offering prayers. This is Vasudeva praying. I know you directly as the Supreme Person beyond material existence, as the impersonal Brahman, as Paramatma and Bhagavan. So he's clear. No such prayers from Nanda and Yasoda, because their love is different. He appeared differently, and they're expressing themselves this way, and Nanda and Yasoda expressing themselves that way. Without that parental affection, the Lord cannot be called the Son. Here are some examples. Varaha came from Brahma's nostril, but is not called the Son. Krishna came out of Uttara's womb after protecting Parikshit, but is not called her son. Nrisingadeva appeared from a column. The column is not said to be the father or mother. Nrisingadeva is their son. Similarly, Vasudeva and Devaki did not regard the four-armed form as their son. However, Krishna appeared with all his expansions as the son of Nanda. This conception is shown in Nanda's actions as he called the brahmanas to perform ceremonies. Okay, let's do some ceremonies. Garga also states that Krishna is principally Nanda's son when he says, previously he was sometimes the son of Vasudeva, meaning in previous lives. Brahma also praises Krishna, saying, Pashupanga Jaya. I offer respects to Krishna, born from the body of the cowherd Nanda. That's the very first of Brahma's prayers. Chapter 14, Brahma's prayers after the Brahma Vimohan Leela. You're the son of Nanda Maharaj. Shukadeva Goswami describes Krishna as Gopika Sutta, son of Yashoda, in this text 21. Also it is said in Gautamiya Tantra, Krishna, the son of Nanda, is auspiciousness for the whole world. He's doing a really full lawyer-like, you know, building his case and confirming his case with scriptural reference. Yeah, Nanda and Yashoda are the mother and father, eternally, as well as in Leela. This verse says, Atmaja Utpane. This is the birth ceremony, back to chapter 5. Atmaja Utpane, when the son was born. It does not say when Nanda thought him as a son. Like with Vasudeva and Devaki, it's the personality of Godhead, now you're a son. It was son. It wasn't personality of Godhead, now he's my son. It was just one thing. That's the point. Therefore, the birth of Yogamaya from Yashoda was for deceiving Vasudeva, produced by Krishna's potency. Maya stayed in Yashoda's womb and Krishna stayed in her heart. Right? mind of Nanda to the mind of Yashoda, to the heart of Yashoda. And the female child was in her womb. Though Garga says, quote, previously he was the son of Vasudeva, he resolves the issue then by saying, your son has been born with many forms and names previously. That is, he was the son of Vasudeva in previous yugas. Thus, Garga's words, as well as Nanda Yashoda's recognition of Krishna as their son, and the statements in scripture establish that Krishna is principally the son of Nanda Yashoda. All of that was for that therefore. Not so-called, like, you know, we sometimes hear the foster child. He's building a case. He's not the foster child. We may say foster child. He's their child. He's eternally their child. Nanda and Yashoda accepted that Yogamaya was created by Krishna for deception, while Vasudeva and Devaki accepted that Yogamaya was Yashoda's real child, and therefore embraced her when Kamsa tried to snatch her away. Fixed in this truth, the couple thought, Vasudeva Devaki. Nanda Yashoda, back to chapter 5, the birth ceremony having a festival. We will broadcast it with a festival. With the birth of a son, Nanda became joyful. Jata Lada. Not only was a son born, but joy was born. Joy was born on the pretext of the son. It appeared spontaneously with the appearance of the sun. This indicates the deep nature of their bliss. This became the cause of a great festival. He called the vipras, breaking it into two. Vi means excellently, like especially, and fulfill, pranti. So that's the vipras. The word vipra, so he's saying, vipra means one who can excellently fulfill. They can excellently fulfill because they know mantras. And through mantras they fulfill. So he called those who can fulfill things through mantras, the vipras, excellently. They were knowledgeable of the birth rites and rules in the Vedas. Shruti says, all the devatas reside in the brahmanas who have knowledge of the Vedas. Nanda purified himself with Achman and Vaishnav Tilak. He had the Brahmanas chant mantras like Bhoyas Tvapi and performed the ceremony for giving intelligence to his son. Karma Palam Prayoktari. The result of action goes to the performer. It was being done in the name of Krishna, so the result goes to Krishna. That's one of the rules of Vedic sacrifice. Vai indicates completion of the action. They performed the ceremonies according to the rules. Vidhi na. Last for this evening. Then they performed worship of the Pitris. Nanda did not perform the Nandi Mukha Shraddha personally, which is the custom, since he was stunned with bliss. The brahmanas had to perform those rites because he was repeatedly stunned. And so back to something that was said earlier, his name indicates he's giving pleasure to the universe. He was experiencing bliss. And the bliss was having Krishna as his son. And because of that bliss, he was doing all these things. His regard, this is my son, I want to make everything auspicious for him. The charity given, the everything was just focused on Krishna. Vasudeva and Devaki didn't get to do any of that. So back to chapter 8, describing the childhood pastimes of Krishna and Braja. And you know, the Nanda and Jasoda and the elder gopis, they're all involved. And Vasudeva and Devaki aren't involved. I mean, they're not only they're in prison, they're not experiencing that wonderful exhibition of loving dealings. In part because their type of bhakti isn't the same. So what does that say about us? Like, you know, practical application 101. That is, what's important to us? So we can follow vidhi, bhakti, which we should do. And when we're performing vidhi bhakti, I've been using this phrase, where is the train going? Like, what's the intention? What's the purpose? What's the goal? You put your hand in your bead bag in the morning. Why am I doing this? It's a vidhi, and so we do it because it's good for us. It was told by scripture, this is good. It's recommended, beneficial, it'll make you clean. So, okay, get clean for what purpose? Well, it's the mode of goodness. And mode of goodness brings happiness. Okay, I want happiness, that's for sure. But it's a limited and temporary happiness because the other modes are mixed and compete. And so is it liberation? No, it's not liberation either. When you put your hand in your bead bag, it's just like you get away from. There's a young boy who's in the devotee family. I'm not mentioning his name on purpose. The parents have been very careful to not push him in a bhakti direction. They want him to, you know, make the steps in bhakti in ways that inspire him to take steps in bhakti. So his parents were really delighted that he likes chanting. They sent me some pictures. There he is, sitting straight, you know, in a park with there's a lake in the background, and he's chanting. So they asked him, because they didn't want to pressure him, he said, what inspires you? He said, when I'm doing my homework, I have to fill my brain with all those math things and science things and things, and I really like just chanting. He likes chanting. It brings happiness to him. That you know, the other things he does very well academically, but it's not the same happiness. There's a happiness in the mode of passion of competing. Young people, not just in modern times, young people compete. It's like part of what you grow up with in academics is you try to do the best or better than the best. You try to be, you know, there's a sense of achievement and accomplishment and competition. It's just part of our, you know, the passion upbringing. And there's another happiness, the happiness in the mode of goodness, and there's a happiness beyond the happiness beyond transcendence. And that's the train. That's where the train is taking us. That's where the Bhagavatam is taking us. To achieve this is text 21. To achieve that mercy that Mother Yashoda and the other residents of Vrindavan achieved, one has to become a follower of those residents of Vrindavan. And one of the ways is just by absorption in these messages. You see, one of the exact same things that we read, where Shukadeva Goswami is saying, these activities of the Supreme Lord are so wonderful, even just hearing and discussing them, what to speak of experiencing them, brings that purification and awakening of attraction. And we're a little covered, more than a little covered. that attraction isn't what it could be, should be, what we might want. But by continuing to hear and trying to understand and trying to assimilate and trying to become absorbed in the message and the mood of the message and, you know, the exaltedness of the resident of Vrindavan, that attraction is part of our Vaidhi Bhakti stage. Do regulations and hear that this message that's lending our attraction, drawing our attraction to these perfected souls. It's a crazy world. It's a crazy time in the crazy world. And one can easily get like caught up in the turmoil of the craziness. It's really crazy. There's an option. We live in practical ways. We live in practical ways. Here we are in Boston. The cold weather is overdue. It's starting to get cold again. So we do things. You turn up the thermostat, and you know we dress warmer. And you know we're dealing with the reality of the world around us. Is my point. But that's not everything. That's not success or happiness or, you know, civilization. We have thermostats instead of something else. That's nice. It's convenience, but that's not what progressive life of human existence is, to go towards this, the real mission of life. And knowing what the mission of life is hard to find it out there. So, Bhagavatam's great medicine, cure the material disease and bring us to Krishna. That's the medicine. See if there's some discussion. Radha had her hand up even before I finished the sentence, so. There's a question in the back also. Go ahead. She wrote her questions down in her phone, so that's what's going on.
Maharaj, I have three questions. The first one is a bit unrelated. A bit. Did Krishna stay forever after returning to Vrindavan?
Yeah, he's eternally situated in unmanifest form in Vrindavan. After he came back from where?
After his
long went back
trip.
To Vrindavan?
Yeah.
He entered into the eternal pastimes with the other associates. Three things happened with Krishna, because he can do multiple things. He and all the residents of Vrindavan entered their unmanifest position or existence in Vrindavan. That's one of the three things. Second, according to Padma Purana, and our acharyas quote it, a vimana descended from the spiritual world and took them all back to Krishna Loka. And the third thing that Krishna did was, in his Prakat Lila, he went to Dwarka to wind up his pastimes in Dwarka. What happened to what?
What happened to Devaki and Vasudev after Krishna?
They went to Dwarka.
Okay.
And then when everybody from Dwarka went back to the spiritual Dwarka, or the, you know, the Krishna Loka Dwarka, they went, that's where they went. Then the unmanifest pastimes also.
And second question is, how can we cultivate the mood of Yashoda and Nanda?
How can we do what?
How can we cultivate the mood of Yashoda and Nanda? Because we're not, because we can't just say Krishna is our son.
How do you cultivate the mood of Yashoda and Nanda? Yes. That's your question? Yes. That's a very elevated stage of bhakti. How you cultivate the mood of Yashoda Nanda is first come to what we're going to hear tomorrow morning. I touched on it this evening. Absorption. Absorption. This is Shantara's description. Absorption in attachment to Krishna, in the mood of wishing to please him. You know, that's dasya, being the servant of. But absorption in that, that's where it starts. And then when that becomes matured, then hearing about, remembering, and you know the stimulations of that ecstatic love become important. The details of Yasoda's smile, Yasoda's hair, Yasoda's dress, the perspiration, you know, all of those things become stimulations of that particular kind of love. She becomes the transforming agent, the catalyst. You know what that term means, catalyst? It's a science term. Here's a science experiment to make it, everything's ready, temperature is right, and the ingredients are right. Then you put in something that's a catalyst that makes it all come together quickly. That's what a catalyst is. But they're the catalyst for that kind of love. But one has to have the prerequisites, otherwise, you know, it's just a nice story, very attractive narration with spiritual potency, but it doesn't bring one fully to the kind of love that they have. Okay.
Third question is, was Krishna scared that Vasudev and Devaki will tell Yashoda and Nanda that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead if they come to Vrindavan?
Was Krishna afraid?
Yes.
Well, he has no fear. We went through that. But he is experiencing a transcendental emotion, that is transcendental fear, that if he leaves Mathura, then the demons may come and harass the residents of Mathura. So he's afraid for them. But same for if he goes to Vrindavan, then the demons will harass the Vrijbasis as well. So he's feeling fear for their safety, not so much for his own. And so he has to, you know, stay and address the demons. But that's a transcendental fear, not a worldly one. Okay?
Asking if Krishna was afraid that Vasudev and Devaki, if they come to Vrindavan, then they will tell Mother Yashoda
yes.
and Nanda.
Well, yeah. Oh, okay. That was your question. Yeah. He's protecting the mood of Vasudev and Devaki. He's protecting the mood of Nanda and Yashoda. But he's in the heart of Vasudev and Devaki. They didn't even have that thought.
Thank you much.
All the way in the back. You have to come forward. You have some online questions, it looks like. Okay. But what's in your handheld phone there? That's not questions? Your questions. Okay, go ahead.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. So, as I understand, Devaki and Vasudev, they had the a realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes, they did.
So is that the reason they did not experience all those pastimes of a little child for themselves as parents?
Because he had left Mathura and gone to Vrindavan. So how could they experience? They didn't experience because he wasn't there.
Probably my question was more like, was that I don't think it's like a karmic reaction why they had to undergo that separation in the first.
It's certainly not karmic.
Not karmic reaction. So it's more like a pastime because of which they had to be in a separation from Krishna in their childhood, in his childhood.
Well, it's not. The language is awkward. I wouldn't use that language if I had to describe what happened. They had a desire from previous lifetimes, Sutapan Prishni, to have a son. Mm-hmm. So they had a son. As a son, the personality of Godhead, he appeared as their son. He fulfilled their desire. That was their desire. They didn't have the same desire as Vasudeva, as Nanda and Yasoda. Uh-huh. And so because they didn't have that same desire, they didn't have that experience.
Mm. Okay. Makes sense. Thank you, Maharaj.
Now you have some question.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. So it was something similar on Prabhuji's same lines of what Prabhuji was asking. So because I've always wondered, when we say the exalted status of all the Vrindavan Vasis, including Yashoda Mata and all of them, and we say they never saw Krishna as someone divine. And then, but always within those pastimes, it's that Krishna gets Yog Maya to intervene so that they don't see his divine form.
They see his form, but they don't understand his position as the personality of Godhead.
But that's because of Yog Maya,
yes,
right?
Of course.
So basically Krishna is intervening so that they don't understand him as God.
Yes.
And
that's from Krishna's side. From their side, they don't have that feeling. It's both. It's not this one only or that one only. It's a relationship. That is to say, they have a particular bhav, a loving affection.
But bhav develops, right? For example, how we are saying that, okay, we want to develop the bhav, we need to be with...
But we're developing and they're developed.
Okay.
We're the practitioners of raga and they're the ragatmikas.
Okay.
There's sadhana siddhas and there's nitya siddhas. They're nitya siddhas. They're not becoming anything. They're not developing anything. It's a big distinction.
Okay. So, when we had that mud-eating pastime, what I've heard in lectures is that when Mother Yashoda saw the whole universe in Krishna's mouth, she started wondering, what is this?
Yes, she did.
So that sort of thing peeped out in a way, isn't it? Like a second of, almost on the verge of seeing him as someone else than her son, and then again Krishna, pulls it back or gets Yogmaya to intervene again.
We discussed that pastime for about a week.
Okay.
And each of those statements that she makes is a particular bhav.
Okay.
The primary love, it's called sthayi bhav, is parental affection. She doesn't move from parental affection. When she sees what she sees, she doesn't move from parental affection, because that's her mood. There's this wave, and that wave subsides, and then there's another wave that subsides, and then another wave that subsides, another. She doesn't waver from. She's his mother. It's bewildering. And. The part of the purpose of that pastime is to stimulate secondary rasas and churn the waves of bhava for her primary rasa. astonishment is a secondary rasa. It's one of the seven. And then there's different waves within that secondary rasa. And so the past, showing his divinity, she never departs from, this is my son. If she comes in for a landing, when whatever, I have to feed him. She just like, you know, so she's always covered by Yogamaya. That's from Krishna's side. Although he's showing his divinity, she doesn't see it because Yogamaya, but also because from her side, she has a particular kind of a prema that doesn't permit to see that, although she sees it.
Okay. When we talk about Vasudeva and Devaki, and you mentioned that as Sutapa and Prashni, they had, I'm not very clear, did they actually say they wanted him as a four-handed?
No. They wanted the Supreme Lord as their son. Or they wanted a son like the Supreme Lord. That was the language used.
Versus, what is there a backstory for Yashoda and Nanda Baba?
No.
Like,
no, they're eternally. They don't become. That's one of the distinctions. Vasudeva and Devaki underwent austerities. That's one of the distinctions. Yashoda and Nanda didn't undergo austerities. They're eternally.
Are Vasudeva and Devaki also eternal associates, or are they like jivas who, because of austerities, got Krishna as the son? And
that's a nice question. That you have to listen carefully to the answer.
Okay.
In chapter 8 of Canto 10, the question you're asking is asked by Maharaj Parikshit. What austerities did Nanda and Yashoda undergo? And Shukadeva Goswami smiles and tells them about Drona and Dara. Drona and Dara are demigods. It turns out Drona and Dara are expansions of the eternal Nanda and Yashoda in Krishna Loka. And they appear as partial expansions of them in the heavenly realm. And they undergo austerities. Brahma comes. Yes, yes, what would you like? We'd like to have the Supreme Lord as our son. Very good. Krishna is soon going to appear on earth. You take birth first, and he'll come as your son. The detail that's not described there in the Bhagavatam is described by our acharyas and elsewhere, because other Puranas describe the detail elsewhere. They enter into the bodies of the eternal Nanda and Yashoda for his Prakat Lila. They're expansions, and they enter into them. During the pastimes, they do experience the parental affection, and after the pastime is over, they return to that heavenly realm, that Drona and Dara. Now, that's chapter 8 of Canto 10. But your question was not Vasudeva and Devaki. Your question was not Nanda and Yashoda. Your question was Vasudeva and Devaki. But I'm explaining that because it's really explicit. So Vasudeva and Devaki, in Krishna Loka, there's three regions, Vrindavan, Mathura, and Dwarka. Correct? That you're very familiar with?
Yes.
Okay. So Nanda and Yashoda, they're eternally in Vrindavan. Vasudeva and Devaki, they're eternally in Mathura. And the residents of Dwarka, they're eternally in Dwarka. So now that there's an eternal Vasudeva and Devaki, and there's Sutapa and Prishni, they're jivas, and they take birth three times. And in that Vasudeva and Devaki birth, that's a living entity, that was your question. They underwent austerities, but they have their counterpart in the spiritual realm. There's an eternal Vasudeva and Devaki in Krishna Loka, in Mathura, in Krishna Loka.
So are they like expansions, like how
yes.
you mentioned for
yes.
Yashoda?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And
it's not clarification. It's not as explicit as it is with Drona and Dara. It's not as explicit as that. But they're jivas that are I have to be careful here. It's not like a post, like, you know, you sometime, some lifetime might also undergo austerities and become Devaki, because it's a post. It's not a post occupied by a fortunate jiva that does austerities. It's not quite like that. But it's not as explicit in the scriptures that I've been researching that say, as it says explicitly with Drona and Dara. Mm. So expansions, yes, but exactly, you know, how that happens is not so clear. Okay. So I'm reluctant to try to be clear when it's not scripturally clear. But expansions, yes.
So can we then understand, because one of the main points of today's lecture, which I thought was the distinction of love between Vasudev, Devaki, and Yashoda and Nanda.
Yes, that was one of the main points.
So then keeping in mind that both those sets of parents are from the eternal world, so when we talk about Vasudev getting the four-handed, Nanda Maharaj getting the two-handed, so the way to understand is their actual forms in the eternal world itself had those sort of affinity or attraction to that form.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Previously I had raised my hand because when you talked about Nand Maharaj doing a lot of dan and charity so that the benefits of that would go to his son Krishna. So in the eternal world, they know that they would know that he's God.
No.
Okay. So then in that case, is it not, I mean, I don't mean to be offensive, but is it not then a karmakanda? Because
no.
Because when he's doing the, like if I'm doing dan for my daughter so that she gets the benefit, it's like, okay, I'm going to do the dan so she gets the benefit. Isn't it similar then?
No, it's dharma. It's not karmakanda.
No, is karmakanda then? I thought it was to get some benefit. You do some rituals.
It's not just the purpose of getting benefit. Who's to be pleased? Krishna's to be pleased. His worshipable, he's a Vaishnav. He's putting on Vaishnav tilak. The family deity is Narayana. When all these, you know, dangerous things happen, they're convinced Vishnu has protected them. Krishna has protected Krishna. When the wind came and knocked over the Arjun trees, and Vishnu protected our son.
Yes.
So they're Vaishnavs, and they're feeling the protection of the Lord. It's not karmakanda.
Okay.
They're Vaishnavas. They're not doing something to get something.
Offering their gratitude and being thankful.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're affectionate to Krishna. That's not karmakanda. You know, anyway. So let's go back to you and your daughter. You know, if you do bhakti, you become, if you come to the stage, not if, as you come to the stage of Shuddha bhakti, you will know, and you can know now, as you come to the stage of Shuddha Bhakti, your devotional merit goes, without you even trying to do anything, goes to your daughter. But it doesn't mean I don't care about my daughter now because I'm a Shuddha Bhakta. There's natural affection. There's material and there's spiritual natural affection. She's part and parcel of Krishna, who's entrusted you to care for this soul and deliver her to Krishna. So that's your affection. It's your motherly service. And that motherly mood becomes spiritualized. in this lifetime, for, you know, we're not Nanda Yasoda, but you know, each one of us can come to that stage also. That's Shuddha Bhakti. So you're doing that, the mercy of Krishna will go to your daughter, so she can be with Krishna.
Okay, thank you, Prabhu Maharaj. If there are no other questions, can I ask some unrelated questions while I have Maharaj here?
We have a related question hand in the back.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes.
Maharaj?
Take your mask off. Thank you.
Maharaj, why did Kamsa kill all of Krishna's six brothers?
Why did Kamsa kill all of Krishna's six brothers? Well, he was advised by his ministers, you better watch out, Vishnu's tricky. And he said, the eighth child, but you never know, so you should kill every one of them. So he thought, that's good advice, so he killed every one of them. That's why. Yes? Back.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. When Devaki, I've heard from other sources I've heard from other sources that you said Devaki had twins. One was Yogamaya, the other was her Krishna. So when Vasudev got his Krishna to Yashoda's house, did the two merge or?
Yes.
Yeah, so.
The Vasudev Krishna merged and Swayam Bhagavan Krishna became one Krishna.
Did Vasudev see this?
We don't know if Vasudev, we have no indication that he saw. And Krishna could conceal or not conceal or reveal. But there's no indication that he concealed. Rather, the indication we have is he just saw the female child, took the female child because that was his assignment. And then they were, we just heard this evening, they thought, this is Nanda and Yasoda's daughter. And that's why they were trying to protect. They thought it was Yogamaya, that, you know, same as what Krishna said to Yogamaya. No, she can't be killed. They weren't seeing like that. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Very good.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Can I ask like an unrelated question?
Sure.
So when every kalpa and every yoga, there's like different like incarnations and like, so then what will happen if like, if can the story change? And if the story changes, like for example, if Jay and Vijaya, they don't offend Sanat Kumars, then the whole story won't be the same. So can that happen or not?
Three things. One is the Jay and Vijaya doing what they did is a very, very, triple very rare circumstance. There are other reasons for the three, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Ravana and Kumbhakarna, Shishupala and Dantavakra, to appear as demons. That's not the norm. That's the unusual, most unusual. That's one. Second is the incarnations of the Supreme Lord have slight variations. Prabhupada's explanation is the reason for that is variety is the mother of enjoyment. That's his explanation. So when the Lord appears, he's enjoying. So it's a little bit like this, a little bit like that, a little bit like this. But the theme or the bhava that he is stimulating and reciprocating with his devotees is the same. The theme is the same, the details are variegated, but they're cyclical. So how it happens this time is going to be a little different than how it happens the next time. But they're cyclical and variegated. So it's the pastime is not dependent upon the prompt. And you know the detail of how the pastime plays out is also variegated from the Lord's side. He's enjoying. He enjoys sometimes this way. He enjoys sometimes that way.
Then so if the pastimes of the Lord are the same, what about like other events, like major events?
Nature's events?
No, like a major event.
Major events, like?
Like this.
World War or something?
Well, world wars might not be happening every time, but like, so not everything is the same every yuga, so there can be different things, except the pastimes of the Lord are just similar?
Yes, yes. Prabhupada uses this example of film, you know, during his time wasn't digital film. It was motion pictures, and the pictures are on a spool, and the spool is, you know, the film goes through a projector that shows intense light, and so it's just little slides, little images that move. That's moving pictures, called movies, moving pictures. So like that, he would say, the pastimes of the Lord move like a spool. But there's variety. You know, maybe it's easy to understand just in terms of seasons. There's four seasons, but not every winter is the same. But every winter is winter. There may be more severe cold, or more snow, or less snow, or whatever. Seasons change, and so forms of the Lord come during the scheduled time, and there's some variety.
Okay, so, and I have another question along with that. So then if, I've heard that only some incarnations, they come like in certain yugas or divya yugas. So then my first question is, when do, like, at what frequency or when do each of the incarnations come? And secondly, since all of Krishna Leela, like the major events were happened this time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came this time. So then did all of the incarnations come like this yuga?
No. For example, Rupa Goswami teaches or writes that Lord Ramachandra's pastimes take place in the 24th yuga cycle of Vaivaswata Manu. This is 27th yuga cycle. The yuga cycle is a lot of years, 4,320,000 years. So I'll say it again. According to Rupa Goswami's writings, Ramchandra's pastimes takes place in the 24th yuga cycle of this Manu, and there's 14 Manus. And his pastimes take place once in the day of Brahma. During the 14 Manus, he comes once. Krishna comes in the 24th cycle, 27th cycle of Vaivaswata Manu. But Krishna doesn't appear during the other Manus. But there are some examples, according to Jiva Goswami. What do we know about these things from other than our acharyas, and they're making reference to scripture, that Varaha appears more than once in a day of Brahma. There's in the Chakshusha Manu and the another Manu, I forget which other Manu. Some other Manu. So in one of them is red and one of them is white. Rakta Varaha and Shweta Varaha. So it's not only the Lord appears once during a day of Brahma, and that's it. Sometimes more than once.
Thank you, Maharaj.
So your mother has some also unrelated question.
Yes, Maharaj. Some of them she actually
she
asked
just
you.
Had. You've been in cahoots with each other. Okay. More.
Something on similar lines. Are you? Can you please explain about the residents of Vrindavan, for example, the gopis especially, because I hear about different types of gopis.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, so do you have time to explain as much as possible?
It's a very elevated subject. Because it's very elevated, I've been cautious about going there because using the modern expression, it's above my pay grade. But there are groups. They're grouped by mood. Like, for example, left wing, right wing, gopis. And amongst the left wing gopis, Radha is the chief. And then there's different groups amongst the left wing gopis, and there are different services they do based upon confidential dealings, based upon their age, based upon the services they do. There's groups of gopis that focus on this service and that service, and then there's many, many, many different groupings, and then amongst those groupings there are subsets, and there's leaders of each of those subsets. And they follow, you know, like a tree. There's a branch, and then there's sub branches that go from that branch, and then there's twigs that go from that sub branches. So the spreading of the gopi assistance of Krishna is tens of thousands, millions, gigabytes and gigabytes, using Dina Bandhu's phrase. And they're all expansions of her. And amongst the detail is given, amongst the eight principal gopis, it's identified what are the principal arts that they're gifted with, which are derived from Radharani, who's the source of all arts. So they embody some. Another one embodies some other ones. And so they're just assisting Radha with her arts in pleasing Krishna. But they're Radharani's assistants, and they have nothing of interest other than pleasing her for pleasing Krishna. And then there's this mysterious, you know, Chandrabali and her groups of devotees, because then it's a seeming right wing. They conform with Krishna's interest, and left wing, Krishna liked even more when they seem to say and do things contrary to Krishna's interest. But it's out of love only. It's not competition they're not sassy or something. It's love. So there are varieties of love based upon services, groupings of ages, like, you know, the very, very young gopi. Some are messengers, some are assisting the assistants, some are directly assisting the assistants, some are directly assisting Radha, some are good at bargaining. You know, there's different services assigned based upon the character and quality, just simply for enhancing Radha and Krishna's loving exchange. That's the basic principle, and there's, you know, the variegatedness is very refined.
So Maharaj, I've heard that the the sages during Lord Ram's time, they did a lot of austerity. So, and they are, some of them became gopis also.
Yes.
So like that group of gopis, do they then become eternal? So they are always there, or is it only for
They don't become eternal. They are eternal. They become sadhana siddhas. Sadhana siddhas. We've been discussing this. Radha's one of her favorite questions. They become siddhas. They actually enter into the rasa dance. So in Krishna's rasa dance, there's nitya siddhas, there's sadhana siddhas, and there's Upanishad shrutis that have come to that position also and take part in the rasa dance. Personified Vedas aspire for that love of the gopis, and they achieve it, and they enter into the rasa dance.
So Maharaj, do the sadhana siddhas, once they attain that position,
they're always sadhanas. But they're not, they don't, the issue with radhas, can they become nitya siddhas?
Yes.
The answer is nitya. They're perfect, but they're not in the same category grouping wise as nitya siddhas, because they're sadhana siddhas. But from in the spiritual realm, you don't have to carry a card.
So then they are a part of the Nitya Leela, like, or are they just part of the Bhoma Leela?
They're part of the Nitya Leela, but not Nitya Siddhas.
Okay.
And
is this something which, were they normal jeev like us? Can we ever aspire to be like a gopi or?
Yeah, it only can. That's Lord Chaitanya's teaching. That's what's encouraged for you to aspire for.
Okay. Thank you, Maharaj.
And there's a path, and that's following those that are perfected. That's today's verse. That's today's verse, text 21 of chapter 9. And that, that's the how-to.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Your husband have anything back there? Okay. So now Radha has, and I think we're going to, how much do we have online?
Two.
Let's do the two. Let's do the two online. The two online. No, that's not Radha. Let's do the two online. You going to read the questions?
This is from Tarani Radha Mansaji. What does it mean to follow the footsteps of the Vrijavasis? Does that stage come after sadhana bhakti reaches its perfection?
It's described in Nectar Devotion, how to, in principle. And during this evening discussion, I also touched on it because there was a question like that. So you read Nectar Devotion, and maybe her question was sent in before I answered the question this evening, but we answered this evening. Go back and listen to the answer this evening and read Nectar Devotion. You'll find out the answer. Go ahead, next.
The next devotee is Giridhar Prabhu. Hare Krishna Maharaj, is it recommendable to desire Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda's mood even though it is not achievable for a sadhana sadhaka?
Well, similar to a question that came up this morning, asked by Radha this morning, was if we wanted to develop love like Nanda Yashoda, what should we do? And the answer I gave was, first we become qualified before you start aspiring something like that. Otherwise, it's cheap imitation, and it's embarrassing. So first become qualified, and one of that qualified is, let's say, it's Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text number 1. Maya sakta manakparta yogam yunjan madashraya. That's, you do that first. Or as we read this evening, completely, intensely absorbed in Krishna. Start with that. And then comes the more mature stage of raga bhakti. We discussed it in previous classes in this section, really, already, and it's nectar devotion. So I recommend you do those things. So now your personal question.
I have two more questions. So the first one is, how did Drona and Dara become other Yashoda and Nanda if nobody can be a Nitya Siddha?
They didn't become Nanda and Yashoda.
Then how did...
They merged into the body of Nanda and Yashoda.
Oh. So they're partial expansions.
It's unique. It's not like, well... The next question from Radha is, how can I merge into the body of Nanda Yashoda? I've gotten to learn her kinds of questions. You become qualified first. And you who knows if that's even what you, the natural eternal rasa for you. So you don't get ahead of yourself. Next.
Just like Vasudev and Devaki, just like Vasudeva and Devaki, there's an eternal form and non-eternal form. Is that the same with Nanda and Yashoda?
No.
Everything is eternal for them.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. So you have something?
Yes,
sure. Your husband's still giving his class.
Maharaj, this discussion about different devotees being the best. So could we understand in this way that they're best in their mood and they're best in their service?
That's a nice way. Okay. They're all the best. That's another nice way.
Another question is regarding appreciating other devotees, both what we are hearing from spiritual personalities and then bringing it to our level. So we are appreciating Mother Yashoda's intense absorption in Krishna.
Yes.
As we are practicing our devotional service, I have noticed, maybe in myself and in general, that the appreciation goes towards the quantity of services a devotee is rendering, which is great, which is shows the, somebody's eagerness and their capacity. And when I appreciate that, I somehow in my heart feels, well, I know another devotee because of some circumstances, they are not able to render that much service. And I feel somehow I am like not appreciating, another devotee who is probably not able to render a voluminous service. So what is the quality that we appreciate in a devotee when we are offering that to another?
You know the answer. The love and devotion with which they offer. Not the volume. But when there's love and devotion, there's interest in volume. But the love and devotion is the quality of love and devotion, not the volume. And if circumstances restrict, I know persons who are by circumstance restricted. By health and by other circumstances, they're restricted. So, they're not to be judged by volume. It's the love and devotion with which they offer what they offer.
And specifically for those devotees who offered a lot of service initially and the health circumstances restrict them, the transition sometimes feels very shocking and sometimes hard to accept that they are not able to render a lot of service. So is that considered to be like nice that they're hankering, or is it considered to be more of a lamentation?
Are you thinking of yourself or are you thinking of that person?
I'm thinking of another person, another devotee.
Okay, so from the other person's perspective, If they were, but now they're not able to by circumstance, health or other reasons, then what's your question specifically?
Question is,
the other person, should they think,
is it, and actually it's applicable, could be applicable to me too at any point.
Sure.
But is it considered to be hankering for service or lamentation that, oh, I'm not able to render so much service?
Well, it depends on the person, what their mood is. It doesn't it? Doesn't it depend on the mood of the person, how they're feeling this way or that way? My experience with persons who are Krishna conscious and restricted by health and other circumstances, they give. Let's just take Krishna Nandini, who recently left her body. Krishna Nandini recently left her body. So during her final, and you know, Bhakti Tirtha Swami and, you know, the people who, they're going with cancer, and you know, there's a young woman, a disciple of Bhakti Tirtha Swami, who left her body. She was quite young with cancer, and her Krishna consciousness was so strong and clear. She was giving. She was experiencing, you know, spiritual emotions of joy in giving, and the devotees were feeling it. The volume of service wasn't the same in those three cases, but, you know, the quality of service was. And they weren't lamenting, oh, I can't do the service I used to do. They were from their position giving, because that's their quality. When they had a body that cooperated, they were giving in a different way. So it depends on the person's mood.
Then now coming back to me and the current, whatever current circumstances I am in, I have to decide whether I should take on more or less, and that quality and quantity balance.
Welcome. Both have their plus and both have their minus. So the, you know, the alignment factor is what is going to be beneficial and pleasing to Krishna. And there's not necessarily a right or a wrong answer. It's, you know, because if it's not on course, the course correcting factor, Krishna, will correct the course. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.